Welcome to the We Raise the Stars and Stripes Over Japan podcast. This is Mark Steven Schwartz, and it is both an honor and a privilege for me to read the diaries of American and Allied civilian prisoners of war interned in and around Kobe, Japan during the Great Pacific War, World War II.
This is episode number 5, and we start with December 14th, 1941. Charles F. Gregg. More rice and salmon with frijoles. We did have a taste of dried limas on Friday, but Japanese found out how to prepare them and took all the beans away from us. Mr. Eldridge and I were appointed leaders of the group and did the talking for them. But although the Japanese treated us most courteously, we could not get any more clothing or better food for the group. At 10:30 a.m., they moved us from the jail to the cathedral, and later on they moved all the naval and marine officers, more enlisted Marines, and Max Brodowski, Jim Thomas, Grant Wells, and Bob Vaughn in with us. It was really good to see D. Morgan, Jim Epley, and the PAA fellows again, also to compare notes with those that had been in Agana during the fighting. Found approximately 15 Americans had been killed and an undetermined number of natives. Had my hair cut native style, Prussian. Was fed at the hospital, the first meal at a table since Monday morning. Could hardly eat for a few minutes because of the savory odor of cabbage, potatoes, pickled pork, tea, and bread. A real feast. The sad part of it is that only a few of us from the jail were fed at the hospital. The rest ate in the cathedral out of their own tin cans. Stew only. We tried to arrange that they be fed the first thing in the morning. Al Hamilef, Max Brodowski, and I were given mattresses with the naval officers, and could not sleep for the soft bed. Mattress was laid on 4 pew benches facing each other on the altar. Japanese have now changed local time to Tokyo time, moving the clock back 1 hour. Driving is done on the left-hand side of the street. Lots of soldiers in the plaza, which is now a parking lot for junk cars. Heard rumors of dollars destroyed, fighting at Petey and sinking of boats, destroyer or middle grounds. Head toilets, terrible, one for 500 men. Numerous inspections and visiting Japanese officers kept the men continually jumping to attention. Rosters of prisoners were prepared and several questionnaires were answered. The humility of bowing low before every Japanese sentry was rigidly enforced. Showers, washing facilities, and toilets were quite inadequate. All men lost weight rapidly and became noticeably weaker. Max Brodowski. We were jammed into the cathedral Catholic Church at Agana, and the kind-hearted Japs proceeded to give us an idea of how little food a man can really live on. Harold Brinkerhoff. Chong, my house girl, brought me some clothes today. She said she had taken all of my furniture over to Notley's. The Japs have taken some of the cushions off my new wicker set. I have not shaved for 7 days. Chong said she would bring my razor, soap, and towel tomorrow. The Jap soldiers are quite friendly. There are several at the windows exchanging words with the boys. There were two who came around with watches which they wanted to trade. One was a fine German watch with diamond jewels, which he traded for an Ingersoll. A fellow called me over and wanted to see my watch. Foolishly, I let him see it. I had a hard time getting it back. I pointed to my initials on the back, and he handed it to me, and I faded back into the crowd. Every time he sees me, he tries to trade with me. I kept clear of him as I was sure the watches and jewels are pilfered goods and might get one in trouble. Reed Hubbard. The Japanese moved all civilians and servicemen, except officers, to the Ganya Catholic Church and parochial school. Officers remained in hospital quarters. Food very scanty. 2 meals per day of about 1/5 enough. Men are weak and lost weight rapidly. No bathing or toilet facilities. Only 2 toilets for 475 men. Skin diseases and vermin rampant. Suffered many indignities such as beatings, bowing, kicking, etc., and lost most personal property. Most of us left our quarters upon surrender without a thing except what we had on. Not even hats in many cases. Hungry all the time, and Japs would not let Guam natives bring us very much. Governor George J. McMillan. On 14 December 1941, United States enlisted men, civilians, including the clergy, and officers were assembled in the KCK building and cathedral on the plaza, Catholic Church property. 5 officers remained at the Naval Hospital for confinement until the day before the entire party was removed from the island. In addition to myself, the party at the hospital consisted of Captain W.T. Lineberry, U.S. Marine Corps, U.S. Navy Commander D.T. Giles, U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander T.I. Moe, and H.J. Van Peenen, U.S. Marine Corps, and pharmacist A.P. Dahl, U.S. Navy. We were not permitted to have communication with a group in the KCK building. It was not until we were leaving Guam that I found the Japanese had made meager provisions for feeding this group. They had lost considerable weight. They had been given 2 meals a day, which were prepared by prison personnel in the Department of Education Cooking School building. The KCK building had only 1 lavatory and 1 toilet for approximately 450 men. There were no bathing facilities until the prisoners rigged up a hose shower in the yard. Officers and men had been rounded up at their stations after the surrender, and in most cases were never permitted to return to their quarters for any personal effects or necessities. In the few cases where they were permitted to return, they found their houses thoroughly looted. Looting was general. The 5 Navy nurses were permitted to remain in their own quarters at the hospital, but on many occasions the Japanese officers and enlisted attempted to enter those quarters. The native nurses, about 32 of them, remained in their quarters for about 3 weeks and were then sent home. 2 of the 3 wards at the hospital were occupied by Japanese troops carrying arms and equipment. A protest was made that troops were being quartered in the hospital, but the Japanese replied these were hospital troops, it being the custom to arm and use these troops for combat duty. The muster of prisoners who were confined in the hospital, including all nurses, was held in the sick ward morning and evening. I was not permitted to visit the patients in the hospital, but by going into the ward early for muster, I was able to have a few words with some of the wounded. William Bill Hughes, a civilian employee of the Public Works Department, had been badly wounded in the chest and arms by bayonets. He told me he was driving his family, he had a native wife, out of Agana to his ranch, where he was stopped by a Japanese patrol and the occupants of the car were bayoneted. He was in serious condition. A native, a member of the Insular Force at Petey Naval Yard, told me he was a passenger in a bus transporting natives from Agana to their ranches. The bus was stopped by a Japanese patrol, and all passengers, men, women, and children, were killed by bayonets except himself, badly wounded, and one man who escaped. December 15, 1941. Governor George J. McMillan. At the time of the surrender, there was a considerable number of Americans, civilians, Navy, and Marine Corps who did not come in immediately. About 15 December, Dr. Stanley K. McNulty, a civilian contract dentist, was brought in by a Guam-born Japanese half-caste, Japanese father and native mother, named Shimizu, who lived in the vicinity of the village of Yona. Dr. McNulty reported to me later that he had been mistreated and beaten by Shimizu, then delivered by him to the Japanese military in Agana. Dick Arvidson. In the morning, the prisoners were again moved to a local cathedral, which became our site of confinement for some weeks to come. There were approximately 500 personnel, including Marines and Navy personnel, as well as civilian contractors, local Caucasian residents, and others such as we Pan Am personnel. Living conditions here are better in terms of there being more space per person. However, there are no adequate facilities such as beds, cots, showers, etc. Food is quite scarce during this period, consisting of a small bowl of what might be considered stew and a slice of bread made available twice per day. Harold Brinkerhoff. We are still in Dorn Hall. To get to the toilet, we are formed into squads and marched back to the bullpen a block away. Chong brought my razor. I talked to Tommy Taneka. He is part Japanese, so he's at liberty. He's a nice fellow and an American at heart, I believe. I've seen Tommy several times, but he seems to avoid me. He is probably afraid to show too much attention to us, as he might get in trouble. The natives are very much afraid. There have been several cases of rape. We heard the soldiers were shot, but later learned they were stripped and lashed. The discipline seems quite good. Charles F. Gregg. Breakfast consisted of a small portion of scrambled eggs and half a boiled potato. Moved out to the second floor of Catholic Recreation Hall with the officers. 10 civilians were allowed to go with them, and Colonel McNulty had to argue like hell to get us permission to stay, as Japanese could not understand how high-ranking military people could be friendly with civilians. The civilians imprisoned with the officers at the recreation hall include Max Brodowski, Al Hameliff, and myself from Pan American, and Clark Eldridge, Reed Hubbard, Sidney McMichael, and Charlie Craver from the PNAB crew, and Slim Houston from Standard Oil. Jim Epley gave me a chivy shirt, so I have a few clothes. Also was given a toothbrush and a pair of socks. I already had an extra pair of pants and a shirt and towel, so I'm now practically well outfitted. Have only a pair of tennis shoes, which are rather hard on the feet after 4 days, and months yet to come, perhaps. No beds or mattresses except 6 for the high executives, so I slept on the balcony overlooking the plaza and on a bench 12 inches wide with a chair for a pillow. Still slept good. Had a shower at the jail, but only had 2 heads and no shower in the church. Roy Henning. Moved to the church. Bryant Sterling. At the hospital. A guard holds up 5 fingers, which means he wants 5 men for a working party. I got sucked in as I was near the door. We climbed aboard a truck which is being towed by a truck up ahead. The truck in front has a load that is covered with sheets. I had a hunch the truck in front was covered with corpses. Sure enough, we pull into the Naval Cemetery. The graves had already been dug, except one which was not deep enough. I grabbed a shovel and started digging graves big enough to hold 3 or 4. Bodies were thrown in the truck like sacks. The bodies were horribly mangled, and many could not be identified. They had lain in the hot sun all day at Dungas Beach. Therefore, they were black and stunk terribly. I kept my eyes off them as much as possible and kept digging so I wouldn't have to handle the bodies. These had been the men who were machine gun and bayoneted trying to resist the Japanese landing party at Dungas Beach. We buried about 12 at this time, mostly U.S. Navy men. The Japanese in charge of the working party gave a short sermon. The Japs made us wash our hands before we left the cemetery. We went back to the hospital. I saw Tony Leonguero walking by. About all she could do was exchange glances. Later, I learned Tony had left behind some soap, a toothbrush, and toothpaste with a mess boy for me. Nothing of importance until night. A man named Houston and I tried to cover ourselves up with sheets of cardboard for warmth. We made quite a bit of noise laughing and with our giggling. The guard threatened me with his bayonet through the wire screen. I ran the length of the building before I could stop. We were told if one man escapes, they will shoot all men. Tony Leonguero comes back to give me towels, a bedspread, and some magazines. I've seen her coming in here quite often. We couldn't talk much. The food was good, but not too plentiful. I finally left the hospital on the 15th of December, 1941. December 16th, 1941. Harold Brinckerhoff. We were moved to the Catholic Church. We wonder and hope it is a protective measure, safe from bombings. It is much cooler here. The ceilings are lofty, permitting a greater movement of air. We have much more room. Some sleep on the pew benches. I slept on the Eiffel floor. The weather is nice and warm. Charles F. Gregg. Breakfast of scrambled eggs mixed with mush, about a teacup full. No shower this area, but washed and shaved. Did some washing, pants, t-shirts, socks, underwear, etc. Did some reading. Checked the list of dead of PAA, Jesus C. Cruz and Ignacio Mendiola. John Wesley is improving, as is Scharfaris and Anderson, although his leg had to be amputated. Japanese soldiers are doing bayonet drill now in the plaza for their or our moral effect. With yells and all, looks rather affected, but they really take it serious. Reported 15 merchant ships now in Opera Harbor, and natives say two troop transports were sunk off of Guam last night. Hospital corpsmen reported two Japs admitted today for shock and shrapnel wounds. Four cases of rape were reported, and a Japanese soldier was reportedly shot for one of the acts. Manuel Calvo came to us today to see if he could get us anything and later returned with soap, cigarettes, toothbrushes for the fellows. Earlier, I had given Mrs. Mesa $15 for some things, but she was only able to get us 6 toothbrushes and 5 razor blades. Soap, Lux, etc., now 25 to 35 a bar, cigarettes 40 a package. Have not smoked since surrender. Manuel is going to try and bring back some oranges for us, as well as other food from his ranch. Was pretty hungry for a while, but Dr. McGinnis's maid brought over 6 sandwiches, the high spot of the day, and he gave them to the 10 of us that were being fed separately. So I had half a sandwich and was really happy. A good lot, all of these naval and marine officers. Some of the officers who had homes in Agana were allowed to go home for their clothes today, but many of them found their houses looted and Japanese living in some of them. December 17th, 1941. Harold Brinckerhoff. We have been cut to 2 meals a day. The helpings are small. We have a slice of bologna and boiled potato and a small amount of coffee for breakfast. One marked difference is that once potato peels were thrown away, but now they're being eaten. Soap, Lux, etc. is now 25 to 35 a bar, and cigarettes 40 a package. Have not smoked since the surrender. Manuel is going to try and bring back some oranges for us, as well as other food from his ranch. Was pretty hungry for a while, but Dr. McMinnis' maid brought over 6 sandwiches, highest spot of the day, and he gave them to the 10 of us that were being fed separately, so I had half a sandwich and was really happy. A good lot all of these naval and marine officers. Some of the officers who had homes in Agano were allowed to go home for their clothes today, but many of them found their houses looted and Japanese living in some of them. There is talk that we civilians will be paroled and allowed to sleep in our own homes. I think it is a lot of wishful thinking. We are divided into 3 groups. One group is first for food that day. If there are any seconds, the group for the day gets them. The same men are always first in line, so they will get any seconds dished out. I have been sleeping on the floor. I put on an extra pair of pants and shirt if it seems it might be a little cool. The floors are beginning to feel a little softer. I am surely glad we are in the tropics. We sleep with all the lights on. Today we constructed a latrine out behind the church. We have had to use 1 toilet in the Padre's quarters. It was very congested for over 200 men. We have made a shower just outside the church near the hospital. We put a deck of 1 inch by 6 inch, about 10 foot by 10 foot, with cracks for drainage. We dug a drain ditch out to the street. The Padres had a shower head and a section of hose. Charles F. Gregg. Slept on a bench and 2 chairs last night and did right well. Get used to anything after a while. Had a good shower in an improvised affair outside the nave of the cathedral. Tom McGee and several of the other fellows constructed an out-of-door latrine, which was badly needed since the water frequently failed in our building today. Breakfast is some rice with a cut of green beans, ground meat, and sauce. Really very good and in sufficient quantity. A good thing, but the time was when half a plate would look pretty small. Dinner was a different thing as we only had half of a medium-sized boiled potato and 3 cocktail sausages. Pedro sent over 2 cans of peanut brittle, which were divided up between 50 of us. Sufficient for 2 small pieces each. The officers were given the same chow as we civilians for the first time. Previously, they had eaten separately at the hospital. The result was rather pathetic, a letdown feeling on their part, and it momentarily broke through the cheerful front they had all been showing. The old grins and banter soon broke out again, however, so it will take real hardship to get them down. Ricky Chen, the chief laundry boy, called on Al Hamilif and I today to see how we were and offered to try and get things for us. He had been pretty hard hit. The Japanese had taken all of his chickens, pigs, food, and clothing from his house, together with his wife's jewelry. You could hardly keep a choke from blocking your speech as you tried to cheer him and yet hear him say that all the Chamorros are praying for their American friends and their returns as leaders of Guam. Mrs. Jesus Rivera also came by, and they have lost all they had and are now living in the country. She asked what she could get for us and later brought back an agog mat to sleep on and 2 pillows. The boys drew lots for these. Segundo, the mess boy, came by this morning with a pot full of hot coffee with sugar and cream in it. Mr. Eldridge gave me a small cookie after dinner this evening. I divided it with Al. Funny how you are so thankful for such a small, insignificant, at other times than these, gift. Al and I had saved 2 cans of salmon from the city jail, so this evening we gave it to the major for the use of all. Food is getting really scarce. Well, time for bed on a wooden bench, or rather two of them, with a sweater for a pillow. Bryant Sterling. I was lodged next at the Catholic school building, which was next to the large Catholic church in Agana. Japanese soldiers move out to make room for us. Marines, contractors, and sailors were segregated into groups on the main floor. The officers were upstairs. I was joined by Don Wallace, Art Okapinti, and Bill Falvey, who were moved from the city jail to the church. They had been living on chum, salmon, and rice and were sick of it. They had plenty of water to drink while in jail. We were being fed two times a day. For the first 4 days at the church, we still went to the hospital to eat. Next, we were fed in the church school, about 140 men in this building, 281 men in the other. The food was good, but exceedingly scarce. Twice a day, we would get one or two tablespoons of stew and one boiled potato cold. In the morning, we'd get a half cup of coffee. Most men became almost too weak to stand up. I slept all day, except for the meals. My first break came when I went on a working party to Petey. Art Okapinti and I went together. They took around 70, all told. We rode in a truck to Petey, accompanied by armed guards. First, we had to load large barges with cement barrels. They weighed 420 pounds each. I managed to sneak off this detail and go to the warehouse where I found lighter work. I helped unload rice and taro. I ate four or five dried onions at a time with salt. Delicious. We were given tomato juice and I managed to get all I could drink. They also gave us some sugar. At 11:30 a.m. we went back to Agana for lunch. I had corned beef. For once, my stomach was full. After lunch, I went back to work at the PD docks. I managed to get 7 packs of cigarettes, plenty of rolled rice, dried onions, and sugar. One Japanese gave us dried fish and some candy. The fish tasted like jerk beef. Art Okapinti and I had 20 pounds of flour he brought with him from the jail. The next problem was how to cook the stuff. I built the first stove and made a fire for cooking. Art mixed water and flour together and we made tortillas. Very good. A Jap takes the stove from us and promises to give us bread instead of the tortillas. John Petrovich and Walt Pleitner think they'll get a chance to bake us bread, but no go. The Japs gave the contract to native bakers. We were promised half a loaf each per day, but we only got one slice each day. Some days, none. The Japanese tell us to start building fires for cooking again. I became the chief cook for Bill Falvey, Don Wallace, Art Okapinti, and myself. The five of us worked together and divided our food up. Paul Betts was the fifth man in the group. We had some very fine stews of rolled rice, onions, and cabbage and coconut oil. Once again, our stomachs got full. Art Okapinti went on a working party and got cabbage, tea, sugar, and candy. We lived good for a while. Bill Falvey's house girl brought in some grub. Don Wallace also has his houseboy bringing in stuff. I found a file, a hammer, and a screwdriver in the church. I managed to make a saw and an axe. This gave us a jump on the other guys. Each night, we have 1 or 2 gallons of coffee between the five of us. We boiled 1 gallon of water in 15 minutes on a candle-powered stove. And this concludes episode 5 of the We Raise the Stars and Stripes Over Japan podcast. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll continue with episode 6 soon.